Cowan still defiant after his sacking by Taoiseach. That's the lead headline in today's Irish Independent and indeed all of today's papers in the Republic, apart from the Irish Daily Star, lead with Micheál Martin's sacking of Agriculture Minister Barry Cowan over the ongoing controversy surrounding his drink driving ban in 2016. Although none of today's commentators offers any insights into what exactly happened in the 7 hours between when the Taoiseach was standing by his minister yesterday afternoon and when he announced that he was sacking him, there's much analysis of how the incident reflects on Micheál Martin and the new government. Night of the Long Knives as Martin steps up to the plate and shows steel is the headline over Miriam Lord's Doyle sketch in the Irish Times. And in his piece in the Irish Independent, under the headline, Sacking Means Coalition's Rocky Start Has Just Got Even Worse, Fionnán Sheehan assesses that the ongoing controversy was causing unease within the coalition and particularly in Fine Gael. Martin had to step up, but the failure of Martin, along with Fine Gael and the Green Party, to address this matter quicker does not reflect well on the administration. Elsewhere on the front pages, D-Day for pubs. That's the lead headline in The Star, which reports on tonight's cabinet meeting, which will decide whether or not pubs can reopen from next week. Back in the front of the Times and Independent, meanwhile, both papers run with the line that the rise in the number of COVID-19 infections has raised serious concerns about the wisdom of reopening pubs. Professor Gabriel Scally's assertion that allowing tourists into Ireland from hotspot countries such as the US could cause a spike in COVID-19 cases generates the lead story in today's Irish News. For its lead story, the Belfast Telegraph analyses the towns and cities which were worst hit by the pandemic. We're told that more lives were lost in East Belfast than in any other part of Northern Ireland during the first spike of the virus. Work until you're 69 to qualify for state pension. That's a headline on the front of today's Independent. And the Times also runs with the front page report on that recommendation contained in a report which is to be published today from the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. The Independent also devotes its lead editorial to this story today. In common with an article by Charlie West and elsewhere in that paper, the piece supports the prospect of a scheme with flexible qualifying ages. The writer suggests that it might be a better option than compelling 68-year-olds who have been in menial, stressful jobs for more than half a century to keep working until they reach their next birthday. Back in the front of the Examiner, it's reported there that the developers of what will be Ireland's tallest building, the 34-storey high Custom House Tower on the old Port of Cork site, have been asked to reconsider their plans for a sky-top bar and restaurant over fire safety concerns related to emergency escape routes. And finally, you might remember that the much-loved Tree of Life art installation, carved into a 200-year-old tree near Bull Island in Raheny in Dublin, was badly damaged in an arson attack last month. Well, the Independent reports this morning that local man Tom Fitzpatrick of the Stone Clean Company provided his services free of charge. And thanks to Tommy, the tree, which is pictured in today's Independent and Star, has now been restored to its former glory.
It took just 140 days to form this government, but 17 days for the coalition to lose its first minister. Refusing a request that he resign, Agriculture Minister Barry Cowan was last night sacked by Taoiseach Micheál Martin following controversy over a drink-driving conviction 4 years ago that just wouldn't go away. The Taoiseach was clear the situation was, as he put it, simply untenable, as he told the Doyle. Mr Cowan in turn said his party leader had, and I quote, undermined and potentially prejudiced his entitlement to a fair process. Later in this morning's programme, the implications of the Cowan sacking for the new government as it tries to find its feet. But first, Maggie Doyle on the Cowan political dynasty and the career of its most recent representative.
Cowan Barry.
First elected to Dáil Éireann in 2011 for the Laois Offaly constituency, Barry Cowan was no stranger to mainstream politics, with his brother Brian, a former Taoiseach, and a TD for 27 years before him. Barry was used to public office. Before winning the seat vacated by his brother, he was a member of Offaly County Council from 1991. Politics was a family dynasty. Their father, Bernard, was Offaly TD from 1969 with a seat in the Shannon in the 70s, and their grandfather, Christy, was a county councillor and a member of the Fianna Fáil National Executive. As a prominent frontbencher for the party, Barry was a spokesperson from his first Dáil term, covering different portfolios, most recently public expenditure and reform.
Fine Gael is approaching the national finances with a recklessness that makes Donald Trump's phone calls look reasonable. Like a stressed out student staying up late the night before the Leaving Cert exam, Fine Gael are desperate to make up for lost time.
After another successful election this year, he went on to become part of the Fianna Fáil negotiating team in the government formation talks.
Yeah, we've just concluded the plenary aspect of the talks, of 5 weeks of active engagement, thorough engagement.
Then just 2.5 weeks ago, he was rewarded with a place at Cabinet, becoming Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine under new Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Just a week later, a story in the Irish Independent about a historical drink driving penalty left him answering questions. Speaking on RTE's The Week in Politics programme, he explained what had happened.
Well, look, that day I was at the match. I had a couple of two drinks before the match. I had something to eat afterwards. I was on the way home when I was stopped and tested and subsequently retested at a Garda station. It was found to be over the limit. It was marginal, but that's not, doesn't take from this the issue at all. There was an issue in relation to the licence, which has since been rectified to a full licence and so forth.
Then 2 days later, he apologised in the Dáil.
My decision in September 2016 to drive home after consuming any alcohol was a stupid, stupid mistake.
But the story didn't go away, with the Sunday Times newspaper reporting that the new minister had tried to evade a Garda checkpoint, something Mr Cowan strenuously denied. On Monday morning, he refused to comment further, while the matter was referred for internal Garda investigation.
I'd rather say nothing about the issue. I think there's been enough said in relation to it, and under advice, I'll not be making any further comment on the matter.
Pressure ramped up from opposition parties and even his new government colleagues, saying he had further questions to answer. Barry Cowan was sacked just 2 weeks and 3 days after being made a minister.
Mackie Doyle reporting. So one of the shortest ministerial careers in the history of the state came to an abrupt end. It was just before 9 o'clock last night when Taoiseach Micheál Martin rose from his Doyle seat to make what the Cian Chorla said would be a statement for the interest of the House.
Cian Chorla, I wish to announce for the information of the Doyle that the President, on my advice this evening, terminated the appointment of Deputy Barry Cowan as a member of the government. Pursuant to Section 4(1) of the Ministers and Secretaries Amendment Act 1946, I have assigned the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine to myself, and I will propose the appointment of a new member of the government tomorrow, if the House can facilitate it. This is a very sad day for Barry, his family and for me. He has been a very committed public representative, very diligent and very dedicated. And over the course of the last 10 days, he has been the subject of significant criticism and condemnation for a road traffic offence that took place in 2016. He's been completely clear and unambiguous regarding his drink driving offence. He gave a personal statement to this House on July the 7th, in which he talked about the stupidity of his actions. He accepted what he did was absolutely wrong, and he apologised to all members. I accepted that his remorse was genuine, and I accepted his apology. When he was first confronted with the allegations, Minister Cowan was immediately clear and emphatic about his drink driving offence and understood the need to acknowledge this. However, he was equally clear and emphatic that one detail of the allegation he was being presented with was completely untrue, namely that he sought to evade Gardaí at the time. We've had extensive discussions on this point last evening and again this morning when he shared with me for the first time the actual Garda record under dispute. Following these discussions and having seen the Garda report this morning, it was my view that it raised additional issues requiring further explanation and clarification. I made this view clear to him and gave him space today to consider the matter further. However, he has decided that he's not prepared to address this allegation publicly and will not make any further statement or answer any questions on this issue in this House. This decision has created a situation where legitimate doubts and additional questions are being raised, and government colleagues are expected to address these. And this is simply untenable. It is my view that Minister Cowan had an obligation to come before the House. It's also my view that this issue is damaging to the ongoing work of government. Throughout this, I am conscious that there are important and legitimate legal processes underway where Deputy Cowan is questioning the accuracy of the Garda record and seeking to establish how his personal information became public. I have sought to respect these processes, and I would ask that colleagues do the same. This decision I have made is without prejudice to those proceedings. The challenges facing this government are unprecedented in scale, and the Irish people require nothing less than our full and undivided attention. It is in everyone's interest that the government not be distracted in any way from doing what is necessary to protect public health and our efforts to rebuild our society and our economy. I thank you, Conchobar, for facilitating this statement.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin addressing the Dáil just before 9 o'clock last night. We can talk now to our political correspondent, Paul Cunningham. Paul, the Taoiseach appeared when he spoke just after lunch in the Dáil yesterday to stand by Barry Cowan, and then we had this shock announcement, his dismissal, his sacking of Mr. Cowan last evening. What changed, do we know?
Well, that shock was shared by many Fianna Fáil TDs and senators who were asking just that question in the immediate aftermath of the announcement that Barry Cowan was gone. Why was it that Micheál Martin appeared to back him in the afternoon and then sack him in the evening? From Micheál Martin's statement, we found out really that everything changed when he read the Garda file yesterday morning, a document which had been presented to him by Barry Cowan himself. They'd been talking on Monday night. The two men met again on Tuesday morning, and Micheál Martin's clear conclusion was that document raised new issues, and because they raised new issues, that required clarification from the minister. And he explained that to Barry Cowan and effectively was creating space for him. However, Mr. Cowan stuck to that position on Sunday as a result of the Sunday Times article. He said he was legally precluded from saying more. He would not be giving any additional statements. And it was at that point Mr. Martin decided and had to make the judgment this was going to create what he heard there. He said in the Dáil, legitimate doubts and additional questions. The country needed a cabinet to give the problems of the state their full and divided attention, and this running story was going to damage the work. If it was an untenable position, and that's what he decided, he then contacted Barry Cowan and asked him to consider his position. And Mr. Cowan clearly declined. And then it was at that point Mr. Martin instructed the president to what he called terminate his office. Barry Cowan was sacked. And that seems to have been the story, stuff happening away in the background and the Taoiseach making a public defence while effectively affording Barry Cowan more time. And when he didn't get the result he wanted, he moved and he sacked him.
Right. Any hope that Barry Cowan would go quietly was pretty quickly dispelled. I think within half an hour or 40 minutes of the Taoiseach's announcement, he'd issued quite a lengthy statement.
He had, and it came in a series of tweets, and I guess the first and the last one have the most punch. The initial one speaks of his surprise and disappointment at the move by Micheál Martin to sack him. So Barry Cowan clearly does not agree at all with this decision, and hence his refusal to consider resigning. He made the Taoiseach sack him. In the series of tweets, he went on to say that he acknowledged and apologised for his actions in drink driving. He'd furnished the Taoiseach with the confidential documents. He was being participative and collaborative. He says Micheál Martin appears to have changed his mind on foot of those documents, and he repeated that he'd never tried to avoid a Garda checkpoint. And then he ends with a punch. The Taoiseach's decision to back and then sack him has, and here's a quote, undermined and potentially prejudiced my entitlement to fair process. And that is some political charge. But as you heard Micheál Martin say in the Dáil, he said, I have sought to respect these processes and I would ask colleagues to do the same. The decision I have made is without prejudice to those proceedings. So that is a big falling out and a big dispute between those two men.
Assess for us then, if you will, Paul, the damage to the government that this controversy is doing, particularly at this early stage in its term of office, and particularly in regard to relations between the parties.
Well, I think that it's clearly been damaging. This has been a running story for nearly 2 weeks now, and that has basically taken public attention and diverted it from the work Micheál Martin is trying to get done. He was the Taoiseach who was appointed on a Saturday and was due to have a cabinet meeting on Wednesday, brought it forward to Monday because he wanted to hit the ground running. He wanted to be seen to be a Taoiseach who was getting stuck in, and yet this story kept running and running. And so it has been damaging in the public mind, and that's one of the reasons why Micheál Martin cited that he had moved, because it was taking away from the actions and the work that the government was trying to do. With regard to the coalition, it's clearly also had led strains. But we'd no indication, Brian, yesterday morning when Leo Varadkar, the Fine Gael leader in Taoiseach, was speaking on Morning Ireland. He said, you know, there wasn't much more that could be said while this legal process was in play. So I think most people felt judgment time would come when the legal process ran out. It's been clear from Fine Gael sources last night that this wasn't an action that they were seeking. But when Micheál Martin told them that he was taking the action, they backed him. So to a certain extent, rather than damaging the internal operations of the coalition, it could galvanise it.
And just finally, and briefly, if you could, Paul, the replacement for Mr. Cowan, the Taoiseach says he will make an announcement today. It reopens potentially the cabinet appointments controversy, but it's also an opportunity maybe within Fianna Fáil to bind up some wounds.
Yeah, one would expect that the Chief Whip, Dara Cleary, is the person who's most likely to be appointed Agriculture Minister, although some point to Charlie McConnell-Logue, who was the Agriculture Spokesperson, as stepping in. If Dara Cleary is appointed, then some possibly Ministers of State would take over his role, and Anne Rabbitt, Jack Chambers are the names that are most regularly being appointed. If they're promoted, there's another knock on. Some backbenchers would be appointed, possibly James Lawless, Niamh Smith, James Brown, some of the names. So there's a three steps to this process if it is the case that Dara Cleary is appointed, and we're definitely going to find out this morning or early afternoon, because the new person, the new minister, has to attend cabinet later on this evening.
Very good. For the moment, Paul Cunningham, thank you very much indeed for that. At 25 past seven.
We'll talk to Fianna Fáil's Michael McGrath and to Sinn Féin's Eoghan O'Brien later. We'll also get reaction in County Offaly. But let's talk now to Solidarity People Before Profit TD, Richard Boyd Barrett. Richard Boyd Barrett, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your understanding of why Barry Cowan was sacked?
Well, I think the whole series of events is very strange, because if I understand what Micheál Martin said last night, it was that it was because Barry Cowan refused to answer questions about the latest revelations over the weekend about the possibility of the police record being inaccurate and possibly the illegal leaking of his personal information, very serious charges. But yet at the same time, Micheál Martin had twice voted against proposals that were put this week and last week that he should answer questions. So I find it very strange that one minute Micheál Martin is saying he shouldn't have to answer questions, and shortly afterwards he sacks him for refusing to answer questions. So, yeah, it raises as many questions as it answers.
In that statement that we heard from Micheál Martin there, he said that the decision by Barry Cowan not to address the allegations publicly had created a situation where, quote, legitimate doubts and additional questions are being raised. He also goes on to say that it was his view, or it is my view, that Minister Cowan had an obligation to come before the House. Does Barry Cowan still have questions to answer to the Dáil?
Well, to be honest, I think Barry Cowan might still have his job if the government had agreed last week to just allow Mr. Cowan to answer questions about the revelations that had emerged. But instead, for reasons I don't really understand, they closed ranks, voted against a proposal by Paul Murphy that he should take questions in the Dáil, as previous ministers in similar situations have done, and did so again last week. So, yeah, I think probably questions continue to persist when the way to dispel those questions was, in fact, just to get up and answer questions in the Dáil.
Do you have any sympathy for Barry Cowan on a personal level?
Of course. I mean, on a personal level, I think nobody was looking actually for anybody to be sacked. What I think people were asking for is just transparency on the revelations that had emerged on a very serious issue, and which got more serious over the weekend. And I think if the government had just come clean and allowed questions to be asked, we mightn't be in the situation we're in now.
Separately, and we'll be talking to our Europe editor Tony Connolly later on the programme of this, the decision being made, or decision due today rather, on Ireland and Apple's appeal against the European Commission's €13 billion tax ruling against Apple. Do you accept that whatever decision is reached today, it's unlikely to be the end of the matter?
Yeah, I raised this yesterday and insisted there should be statements in the Dáil this week on foot of this ruling, because I think we would certainly accelerate the process of potentially getting €13 billion in unpaid taxes from Apple, which the EU say we are owed, if the government dropped its support for Apple's appeal. I think that would fatally undermine Apple's case. And while it wouldn't be over immediately, it would certainly make it more likely that Apple's case would fall, and that we would then benefit at some point in the hopefully not too distant future from 13 billion, which we could desperately do with. And I just find, and I think most people find it incomprehensible, that the government do not want 13 billion euro when you consider the enormous costs of COVID-19, the huge economic crisis we're now facing. That money would transform our fortunes and could be help deal with, you know, huge numbers of people who are now unemployed, a big economic fallout of COVID-19. Yet, bizarrely, Micheál Martin again suggested yesterday, implied yesterday, they would continue fighting against getting and taking that 13 billion euro. It's extraordinary.
Richard Boyd-Barrett, thank you. It's 29 minutes past seven. Brian Finn has the business news.
Thank you, Gavin. Good morning. Chambers Ireland is calling on the government to extend the wage subsidy scheme for vulnerable sectors and introduce a 12-month waiver on commercial rates in next week's July stimulus. It says the package of supports will be the last chance to ensure that vulnerable firms can survive. It's calling for grant aid to ensure businesses can tackle debt and outstanding invoices. About 1 in 20 private sector firms surveyed by AIB said they believed it would take at least 2 years to recover from the COVID hit to the economy. The most common time frame in the survey was 7 to 12 months, which was cited by around a fifth of firms. The outlook for profitability among firms was at its lowest since October 2010. A recovery plan proposed by Aer Lingus has been rejected by just over half of SIPTU members at the airline. A key part of the proposal would have seen staff paid a maximum of half of their salaries as against the 30%, the current 30% arrangement. It's understood the ongoing uncertainty in the aviation industry prompted workers to reject the plan. On the currency markets this morning, the euro is trading at $1.14 and 90.6 pence sterling.
Sports news. Damien O'Mara, good morning.
Gavin, good morning to you. It's soccer to start, where Chelsea have given their hopes of qualifying for next season's Champions League a boost following a narrow 1-0 win over the already relegated Norwich City last night. Olivier Giroud scored the game's only goal in first half stoppage time. Chelsea sit third in the table this morning with 63 points. They're 4 points clear of Leicester City and Manchester United, both back on 59. Chelsea do have one game more played this season. Their manager is Frank Lampard.
That was okay. Listen, I shouldn't baby joke, because at this stage of the season, as we've seen in the last 48 hours, results are critical, and we didn't concede any chances of a big note for them to let them score a goal. We created a few ourselves. We get our one goal. Maybe we could do more. We can be a bit better with our quality. You know, it was okay, and professional would be probably a word. I want more, but that can wait. I think where we are at the moment as a team, and the position we're at in the table, 3 points is everything tonight. We can sort of sit down and watch the other teams play this week now, and have the FA Cup as our focus for this weekend. But there's obviously still work to do.
Four games take place in the English Premier League tonight. The champions Liverpool are away to Arsenal at 8:15. Second place Manchester City host Bournemouth at 6 o'clock. Much of yesterday's managerial press conferences ahead of tonight's games were dominated by Manchester City's successful appeal against UEFA's ruling that they had breached financial guidelines. The Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp described the situation as not being a good day for football. The Spurs manager Jose Mourinho labelled the process as a disgrace, saying that financial fair play was now a circus. In contrast, and probably understandably, the Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola has launched an impassioned defence of the club's financial dealings. He's also criticised the eight Premier League clubs who had lobbied the Court of Arbitration for Sport to uphold their initial penalty. We'll hear from Guardiola at 8:30. There was also a remarkable result in the English Championship last night, with Wigan Athletic beating Hull City by 8-0. Wigan led by 7-0 at half time. It's the largest winning margin they've recorded in the history of the club. They're managed by the former Sligo Rovers manager Paul Cook, and as a lot of people might know, Wigan recently went into administration shortly after its ownership was transferred between companies controlled by their majority shareholder. Funds which were expected to be invested in the club were subsequently withheld. Most of the club staff have been made redundant. Players and management are receiving 20% of their wages at most. And a supporters fund aimed at saving the club has raised nearly €160,000. They're facing a 12-point deduction at the end of the current season. Last night's result leaves them 12 points above the relegation zone with 2 games left to play. West Brom missed out on replacing Leeds on top of the Championship table after they drew nil-all with Fulham. In rugby, it's reported this morning that CVC, the private equity firm which is in talks to purchase a minority stake in the Six Nations, has sought to insert a clause in the deal which would allow them to withhold funding if the tournament schedule is affected by a second wave of COVID-19. The Financial Times are reporting that the firm are willing to maintain their €330 million investment but want protection should fixtures be impacted or unions affected financially. The Irish Times, in contrast, is reporting that the offer has been reduced to €165 million. Four matches from the 2020 Championship were postponed as a result of COVID-19. The Six Nations confirmed last week that exclusive talks with CVC are ongoing. The deal is seen as a much-needed financial boost for the participating nations. As reported yesterday morning, the GAA have confirmed that dressing rooms and club gyms will remain closed beyond their initial planned return date next Monday. The association has also published updated guidelines on their website for clubs who encounter positive COVID-19 cases. Tiger Woods has backed the decision to postpone this year's Ryder Cup until 2021, saying the event would not be the same without fans. Woods returns to action for the first time in 5 months at the Memorial Tournament this week. He's won the event a record 5 times, the last in 2012. Organisers of the Laytown races yesterday confirmed that this year's scheduled meeting will now not take place in September. While action at home today is in Downpatrick from 1 o'clock, there's also a card in Killarney which is underway at 4:25. More sport on the way after 8:30, and updates available as always on the RTE News Now app and also on the RTE Sport website.
Well, the figures are staggering, the issues at stake hugely significant, the parties involved among the most globally powerful in business and government. The General Court of the European Union will this morning give its ruling in the appeal by Ireland and tech giant Apple in the €13 billion tax case. Following an investigation into Apple's tax arrangements here, the European Commission found that Irish revenue officials had issued rulings that substantially and artificially lowered the tax paid by Apple in Ireland since 1991. The Commission ruled that Apple owed €13 billion in back taxes, a ruling which is being contested by the government and Apple itself. We can talk to our Europe editor, Tony Connolly. Tony, the General Court of the European Union, it's a stage in the process because I think everyone expects that whatever the ruling today, it will be appealed. But how important a stage?
It's a hugely important stage, Brian. This is the General Court, which is in a sense the lower court of the European Court of Justice. It used to be called the Court of First Instance. So this is indeed the first stage. So whatever result we get this morning will most likely be appealed by whichever party loses. Now, to remind people what this is about, in 2013, Tim Cook, the chief executive of Apple, got a grilling before a US Senate committee. They accused Apple of avoiding billions in tax through what were described as ghost companies in Ireland, and Ireland was accused of being a tax haven. And as a result of that hearing, the European Commission launched an investigation into Apple's tax affairs, and that investigation concluded in 2016. Now, the two central allegations by the Commission are that in 1991 and 2007, the revenue commissioners granted two tax rulings or tax arrangements for Apple, which effectively rubber-stamped a way of determining the tax for two Apple subsidiaries, and they were Apple Sales International and Apple Operations Europe, that were both managed outside of Europe, but were effectively traced to a head office in Ireland. Now, these two companies dealt with all the sales of Apple products outside of the Americas. But the central allegation by the Commission is that the profits recorded by these companies were attributed internally by Apple to this head office, which the Commission says only existed on paper and couldn't therefore have generated these huge profits. And in effect, under the provisions of Irish tax law, which have since been changed, these were not subject to tax in any country. And as a result of that, in 2003, according to the Commission, Apple paid only 1% of tax on those huge profits, and in 2014 paid only 0.005% of tax. This related to Apple Sales International. So this, the Commission said, was illegal state aid. This was Ireland effectively granting money to a company at the disadvantage of everybody else, and under EU law, that's illegal.
Right. So it was a judgment or a ruling in relation to state aid, not in relation to our tax affairs or tax rates or tax arrangements here in that sense. And there was a lot of criticism at the time of the government's decision to be party to this appeal. Do we know, Tony, if the judgment goes against the government and Apple today, will the government continue to this appeal process?
I think it's widely expected that the government and Apple will both appeal if they lose this case today. These are two separate cases. Apple is appealing the judgment by the Commission, and Ireland is also appealing. Now, they may be handled as one a single case by the court. We'll have to wait and see at around 10 o'clock Irish time when the judgment comes out. But it is most likely that both entities would appeal if this judgment goes against the company and against Ireland. Likewise, if it goes in their favour, the European Commission is likely to appeal this issue, because this is a hugely important test case for the way global multinationals are taxed internationally and at European level.
And just a final question briefly, if you can, Tony. The money involved, the $13 billion, that's been placed in an escrow account, a separate account controlled by financial advisors. What's happening to that, and what might happen to it if the ruling eventually was vindicated?
The money was placed in an escrow account, $13.1 billion in 2018, and that's been managed by three separate companies: Amundi, BlackRock Investment Management, and Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Now, they have been using that money for what they're calling low-risk investment, and the taxpayer is protected by the outcome of any of those investments. Now, it has declined. It declined in the first year by $16 million, and then in the second year by €249 million.
Yeah.
Now, €209 million of that was granted to an unnamed third country as a tax payment. And that is important because the Commission has laid out the possibility that if other European member states who feel that that tax should have accrued to their country, they could appeal and they could get a slice of this money. But we'll have to wait and see.
Very good. Tony, for the moment, thank you. We'll be hearing no doubt more from you in the course of the day. The time just coming up now to 7.45.
To our main story this morning, the sacking of Barry Cowan as Agriculture Minister by the Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin. Micheál Martin said that a Garda file in relation to Barry Cowan's drink driving offence 4 years ago had raised additional issues that required more explanation, and that it was untenable for members of government to address these concerns in the Dáil while Mr Cowan was refusing to do so. We'll hear from Fianna Fáil Minister Micheál McGrath later and get reaction in County Offaly. Let's talk now, though, to Sinn Féin housing spokesperson Eoghan O'Brien. He's with us in our studio. Eoghan O'Brien, thank you for coming into us this morning. What's your understanding of why Barry Cowan was sacked?
Well, the straight answer is we don't really know. Marilyn MacDonald raised the question of this dispute between the former minister and the Garda pulse record from the 2016 drink driving incident. Micheál Martin backed his man and then voted to oppose a change in the order of business for the minister to come in and answer questions, as we had tried to get the minister to do the previous week. We understand that there were then conversations between the Taoiseach and then Minister Cowan, the Taoiseach and the other leaders of government. And I think in a move that surprised everybody, we then heard the announcement of a request to resign and then a sacking. I mean, what this shows is there's clearly more to this than is in the public domain. But what it also shows is a kind of a certain chaotic handling by Micheál Martin. I mean, the Irish Times is clearly alleging yesterday that Micheál Martin knew about this incident before Barry Cowan took to the floor of the Dáil to make his allegedly comprehensive statement last week. The Sunday Times has been very clear that Barry Cowan knew about this the previous Friday, again before he made a statement, and yet he got up on the floor of the Dáil and gave the impression that what he had said last Tuesday was a full account. That's clearly not the case, and the big issue here is trust. You know, how can we trust Micheál Martin if he knew about this 10 days ago but only acted last night?
Well, Fianna Fáil is clear in saying that Mr. Martin first heard about it on Tuesday morning and not 2 weeks ago. And put yourself in Micheál Martin's position. If you had a legitimate expectation that your minister was going to address these issues publicly and you went into the Dáil to defend him and then he turned around and said he's still not going to address it publicly, did he have any choice?
Well, again, from reading the various accounts of this in last night's papers, the suggestion, in fact, was Barry Cowan told the Taoiseach before the Taoiseach took the floor on the Dáil yesterday that he wasn't going to answer questions about it, and that the Taoiseach somehow was trying to buy his minister time. But I suppose for me, I don't find it credible that if Barry Cowan knew about this, as the Sunday Times has alleged, on the 4th of July, I don't find it credible that Micheál Martin didn't know before the former agricultural minister took to the floor of the Dáil last week. And again, I have to say this, like, there are a lot of people out there who had concerns when Fianna Fáil re-entered government about the issue of trust. Could Fianna Fáil be trusted to be honest and straight with the people about any particular issue given the record? And this brings back all the old memories of Fianna Fáil saying one thing one day and another thing another day. And I would imagine if I was Eamon Ryan or Leo Varadkar, and if I'd been told by Micheál Martin after Barry Cowan's statement last Tuesday that was it, there was no more, and then this further revelation comes out, I'd be pretty sore. So this is a much, much bigger issue just than the historic case of 2016. This is about trust with the people and trust within government, and it shows there is a certain chaos in Micheál Martin's handling of the matter.
Your party didn't press for further questions to be answered after Barry Cowan's initial Dáil statement. Were you wrong not to press for further questions?
Well, the first thing is we pressed and forced a vote on whether or not there would be a question and answer session last Tuesday. Unfortunately, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Green Party, and in fact Labour voted against that. So it wasn't that we didn't press it. It was a majority of TDs in the Dáil blocked that.
I think you said something, I'm paraphrasing, that it was a distraction and that there were other more pressing issues for the government to concentrate on.
It absolutely was a distraction, but we wanted answers. In fairness, when these latest revelations then became public, it was Mary Lou MacDonald who took to the floor of the Dáil yesterday and pressed the Taoiseach. And not just press the Taoiseach about Barry Cowan, this is also now a matter for the Taoiseach, and today the Taoiseach will have to answer the questions. What did he know? When did he know it? Why did it take him so long to act? So in fairness, I think we've acted responsibly and reasonably, but what we now need to establish is, if the Taoiseach knew about this last week, why did he cover for Barry Cowan for a week? Did he deceive or lie or mislead his government colleagues? And Micheál, what does
Martin
that say?
As far as I understand, Micheál Martin said that he was aware of a newspaper report beforehand, but he only saw the document. In other words, the Pulse report, which was Cowan's discretion.
Here's the difficulty for all of us, right, is that is what he is saying. Yet the Irish Times was reporting yesterday that they had sources which suggested Micheál Martin knew 10 days ago. And the difficulty now in all of this is that both Barry Cowan and Micheál Martin are challenging accounts of sources in newspapers, of the Garda Síochána on Pulse. That is a very, very bad set of circumstances for a new government. And that's why it raises fundamental questions about trust and honesty. And that's why Micheál Martin has further questions to answer today.
Eoghan Brin, thank you very much for coming into us this morning. It's 10 to 8.
Now, just gone 7:52 here on Morning Ireland. Time for our business news this morning with Brian Finn. Good morning, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning. Chambers Ireland, which represents over 8,000 businesses here, is calling on the government to extend the wage subsidy scheme and introduce a commercial rates waiver in next week's July stimulus. Ian Talbot is chief executive of Chambers Ireland. And the wage subsidy extension, you say, Ian, is for vulnerable firms. That's probably quite a few firms at the moment. How do you categorise them, and for how long are you seeking the extension?
Good morning, Brian. Well, it's very hard to know how long we're seeking the extension, to be honest, in that there are so many businesses that will be continued to be vulnerable as we need to put measures in place to restrict them. So I think certain sectors are well and truly open, but still suffering from very low footfall. Other sectors, for example, we still don't know yet if the pub industry, for example, is able to open. And there's individual sectors such as, interesting to see this morning, a form of subsidy for the bus sector. So we have to look at individual sectors, see how long they're going to be impacted, and work with them, primarily through this wage subsidy scheme, to ensure they can continue to stay in business over the next potentially 12 months.
You're also calling for direct grant aid. Now, the government unveiled plans for its credit guarantee scheme yesterday with low-cost loans. Is that likely to be where the firms are directed?
Well, we believe the Restart grant is going to be improved as well. The credit guarantee scheme, while welcome, and certainly will help the banking industry to provide more loans, it's only a part of the picture. I think for most companies, the type of exposures they're looking at now, which are around working capital, costs to reopen their business, bad debts that they're experiencing from pre-COVID, for example, that haven't been paid. It's not the sort of thing you typically look to borrow for, and this is where we're looking for grant aid to help companies through those issues.
And to what extent would you be seeking an extension of the grants?
Oh, very much seeking an extension of the grants. We need to see the grants being expanded to bigger amounts for a broader reach of companies. Also, a big issue seems to be that companies seem to conclude too easily that they're not eligible for the grant. Most companies are, so we'd urge companies to ensure that they check whether they're eligible or not and get their applications in. But this restart grant, companies are going to keep restarting for the next 6 to 12 months, and we still don't know how this virus is going to be reacting as we open up from lockdown, as we effectively get out of an economic mini ice age. So we believe this is going to need to be in place for quite some time yet.
Businesses here are considered to have fairly low debt because they paid back a lot of it since the last downturn. Isn't it fair to ask them to take on a bit more debt this time, given that the banks have been asked to have skin in the game in the credit guarantee scheme and the taxpayer is too?
Well, I think our businesses are being very, very resilient. And certainly we've gone into this crisis, fortunately, in a much better state than we were in 2008, 9, 10, that period. But the issues that are arising now, particularly around the amount of time that businesses have had to lock down, the fixed overheads they haven't been able to cut, and in particular a growing bad debt issue is of concern for us, and that's why we're looking for support. And the bad debt issue is a very circular thing. If one company can't pay its debt to another, that knocks on the next company and so on. So that's quite a big thing. If we can start that cycle of debt repayment, that would be very positive.
Ian Talbot, Chief Executive of Chambers Ireland, thank you very much indeed. More business news at 8:30. Gavin.
July the 15th, St Swithin's Day, the legend, if thou dost reign for 40 days, it will remain. St Swithin's Day, if thou be fair for 40 days, will reign ne mair. Will our summer be saved? Matthew Martin is at Met Aaron.
Thanks, Gavin, and good morning. Well, it does look like the changeable weather pattern is going to remain with us over the next few days, and there will be a little bit of rain, but good dry spells also, especially across parts of the east and south of the country, with the best of the sunshine expected here. This morning is mostly cloudy and rather misty with patchy drizzle, this mainly affecting the north and east of the country. However, long dry spells will develop today, and a few sunny spells too, the best of these across the south and southeast. Highest temperatures for today generally ranging 16 to 19 degrees, but reaching 20 or 21 degrees in any sunshine, with moderate west or northwest breezes. And tonight will be another mild and humid night with patchy mist and drizzle, and minimum temperatures no lower than 12 to 15 degrees. Then tomorrow, Thursday, will start mostly cloudy and misty with patchy drizzle. However, the cloud will break up in many areas tomorrow afternoon, especially in eastern and southern counties, allowing for some warm sunshine to develop. Top temperatures for tomorrow of 16 to 21 degrees, with warmest temperatures in South Leinster. Then looking ahead towards the weekend, Friday will be another mostly cloudy day across Westminster, Connacht and Ulster with rain at times and highest temperatures of 16 to 18 degrees there. However, elsewhere across the country, it will be mostly dry on Friday with a mix of cloud and bright spells and temperatures of between 19 and 22 degrees. And for the weekend on Saturday, patchy rains expected to clear early on to leave a bright day with sunny spells and just a few passing showers, and feeling fresher by then with highest temperatures for Saturday of 16 to 20 degrees. Early indications then are for Sunday to start dry and bright, but cloud is expected to become more extensive by Sunday afternoon, perhaps bringing a few light showers. And still fresh enough on Sunday with temperatures of 15 to 18 degrees. So a rather mixed weather this week, but to recap for today, any patchy rain and drizzle will tend to clear to leave a good deal of dry weather today, albeit with lots of cloud. The best of any sunny spells are likely in the southeast and south of the country. That's the forecast. Thanks for listening and have a good morning.
Good morning again on Wednesday the 15th of July. This is Morning Ireland on RTE Radio 1 with Brian Dobson and Gavin Jennings. The news is read by Brian Jennings.
The Taoiseach Micheál Martin is set to appoint a new cabinet minister today following the sacking of the Agriculture Minister Barry Cowan last night. Mr Cowan said the decision to remove him from office had undermined his entitlement to fair process. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehan.
It was a night of high drama in Leinster House as the Taoiseach confirmed that he had sacked the Agriculture Minister. Micheál Martin said the Garda file relating to Barry Cowan's drink driving offence had raised issues that required more explanation. He said it was untenable for members of government to address these concerns in the Dáil while Mr Cowan was refusing to do so. He added that the issue had become damaging to the ongoing work of government. Barry Cowan said he was surprised and disappointed by the decision to remove him from office. The former Agriculture Minister, who was in office for just 17 days, strenuously denies any allegations that he attempted to avoid a Garda checkpoint in 2016. He did receive a three-month road ban at the time for drink driving, for which he apologised. Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty said the Taoiseach still needs to explain why he appeared to back the Agriculture Minister at 2 o'clock in the Dáil yesterday before later sacking him. Labour leader Alan Kelly said something had changed in relation to the information around what he described as this entire saga.
The Cabinet is to meet this evening and will discuss the latest advice from the National Public Health Emergency Team on the easing of Phase 4 of COVID-19 restrictions due to take place next Monday. NPHET has expressed concern about the scheduled reopening of all pubs due to the significant number of young people who have caught the virus in recent weeks. Yesterday evening, the Department of Health said that there have been no further deaths of people with COVID-19 here. It also confirmed that there have been 32 new cases of the virus. The General Court of the European Union will give its decision today on Apple and Ireland's appeal against the European Commission's €13 billion tax ruling against the technology company. However, it is widely expected that regardless of the outcome, the decision will be appealed to the EU's highest court. Our business editor, Will Goodbody.
It's 4 years since the European Commission directed Ireland to recover €13 billion in unpaid taxes and €1.2 billion in interest from Apple, covering an 11-year period up to 2014. The Commission concluded tax rulings in 1991 and 2007, issued by revenue to Apple, substantially and artificially lowered the tax paid by Apple in Ireland, amounting to illegal state aid. But both Apple and Ireland have strongly denied the Commission's claims and lodged an appeal with the European courts that was heard over 2 days last September. Apple argued the European Commission's order defied reality and common sense and represented an attempt to retrofit tax laws, while the state claimed the decision was fundamentally flawed and interfered with its sovereignty by seeking to override national law. But if confirmed by the court today, the tax ruling has the potential to damage the perception of Ireland's corporation tax system, which remains a key selling point for foreign corporate investors, although it's widely expected that whatever today's decision, it will be appealed.
The Irish Fiscal Advisory Council has warned that Ireland will soon become one of the fastest ageing populations in the EU. In its first long-term sustainability report, the Council says the impact on government debt will be substantial and long-lasting. Our economics correspondent Robert Short.
Ireland as a nation is getting older. The percentage of the population aged 65 and over as a share of those aged 15 to 64 will more than double from 22% today to almost 47% in 2050. This means relatively fewer people working to sustain higher spending on healthcare and pensions. IFAC warns in its report today that spending to keep up with an ageing population will push the public finances into deficit from 2026. This will add substantially to the national debt over time. The decision to defer next year's increase in the pension age to 67 will add €575 million to current spending and rise over time, something its acting chair Sebastian Barnes describes as a step in the wrong direction. The cost of not increasing it, as planned, to 68 in 2028 will add another €1.5 billion a year.
US President Donald Trump has signed an executive order ending trade preferences for Hong Kong and signed legislation that authorizes sanctions on banks over China's imposition of a new security law on the territory. The move will end the preferential economic treatment Hong Kong has received from the United States for years. Mr. Trump said Hong Kong would now be treated the same as mainland China. China's foreign ministry said Beijing will impose retaliatory sanctions against US individuals and entities. Now the time is coming up to 8:06.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Centra. Make the most of summer. We've everything you need at Centra.
Mostly cloudy and rather misty this morning, with patchy rain and drizzle chiefly affecting the north and east of the country. However, long dry spells will develop as the day progresses, especially across the south and southeast, with sunny spells possible. Highest temperatures 16 to 19 degrees generally, but reaching 20 or 21 degrees in any sunshine.
The sacking of Barry Cowan, today's decision on whether or not to reopen the pubs, and a proposal to raise the pension age to 69 are some of the stories on your front pages this morning. All of today's papers in the Republic, apart from the Irish Daily Star, lead with Micheál Martin's sacking of Agriculture Minister Barry Cowan over the ongoing controversy surrounding his drink driving ban in 2016. Although none of today's commentators offers any insights into what exactly happened in the 7 hours between when the Taoiseach was standing by his minister yesterday afternoon and when he announced that he was sacking him, there's much analysis of how the incident reflects on the new government. Night of the Long Knives as Martin steps up to the plate and shows steel is the headline over Miriam Lord's Doyle sketch in the Irish Times. In his piece in the Irish Independent, meanwhile, under the headline, Sacking Means Coalition's Rocky Start Has Just Got Even Worse, Fionnán Sheehan assesses that the failure of Martin, along with Fine Gael and the Green Party, to address this matter quicker does not reflect well on this administration. D-Day for pubs, that's the lead headline in The Star, which reports on tonight's cabinet meeting, which will decide whether or not the pubs can reopen from next week. And The Times and Independent also carry front page reports on this story this morning. For its lead story, The Irish News quotes Professor Gabriel Scally's assertion that allowing tourists into Ireland from hotspot countries such as the US could cause a spike in COVID-19 cases. More lives were lost in East Belfast than in any other part of Northern Ireland during the first spike of the virus. That's according to the lead story in today's Belfast Telegraph, which analyses the towns and cities which were worst hit by the pandemic. Work until you're 69 to qualify for state pension. That's a headline on the front of the Independent. And the Times also runs with a front page report on that recommendation, which is to be published today in a report from the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. And the Independent also devotes its lead editorial today to proposals to raise the pension age. Elsewhere this morning, a number of today's papers report on an incident on Wednesday in which four teenage girls escaped serious injury after becoming trapped in a barn in West Belfast, which had been set alight by a group of youths. Extensive coverage is also given to a court case in which the landlord of a nightclub premises on Baggot Street in Dublin requested that his tenant should forfeit her tenancy because she had used the premises as a brothel and for staging sadomasochistic practices. The 2-year jail sentence given to 50-year-old Michael Riley for a raid roach incident on the Malahide Road in Dublin in 2017 is also reported on in most of today's papers. And a plan to build a replica of a 50-foot-high mausoleum, which was originally erected in 1690 but was destroyed by Kerry County Council more than 60 years ago, is carried on the back of today's Examiner, as is a story about a renewable energy project run by a consortium in UCC which aims to convert wind to hydrogen. And that story also generates an editorial in today's paper under the headline, Answer Blowing in the Wind. The Star has a nice picture story today about Ireland's oldest councillor, Ian McGarvey, from Remelton in County Donegal, who celebrated his 90th birthday yesterday. And finally, former Love Island and Dancing on Ice contestant Maura Higgins is pictured on the front of today's Mirror, since a new television show, which sees her taking on an extreme obstacle course in a bid to get fit, goes to air tonight on ITV2. The show is named after her favourite catchphrase, "You're joking me," and we're told that since appearing on Love Island, the Longford native has also signed up for a lucrative contract with Ann Summers and has racked up 2.8 million followers on Instagram.
17 days after being appointed as Minister for Agriculture, Barry Cowan has been sacked. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin said that a Garda file relating to Barry Cowan's drink driving offence 4 years ago raised additional issues that required more explanation, and that it was untenable for members of the government to address these concerns in the Dáil while Mr Cowan was refusing to do so. Barry Cowan apologised to the Dáil last week for drinking while driving on a learner's permit. Since then, he has looked to change the record of a Garda report of what happened, which suggested he may have tried to avoid a Garda checkpoint, and to find out how that report became public, but refused to address the Dáil again on the matter or take questions. In the Dáil yesterday, the Taoiseach defended that position, but later that day sacked his minister. Here's some of what Micheál Martin told the Dáil.
This is a very sad day for Barry, his family and for me. He has been a very committed public representative, very diligent and very dedicated. And over the course of the last 10 days, he has been the subject of significant criticism and condemnation for a road traffic offence that took place in 2016. He's been completely clear and unambiguous regarding his drink driving offence. He gave a personal statement to this House on July the 7th, in which he talked about the stupidity of his actions. He accepted what he did was absolutely wrong, and he apologised to all members. I accepted that his remorse was genuine, and I accepted his apology. When he was first confronted with the allegations, Minister Cowan was immediately clear and emphatic about his drink driving offence and understood the need to acknowledge this. However, he was equally clear and emphatic that one detail of the allegation he was being presented with was completely untrue, namely that he sought to evade Gardaí at the time. We've had extensive discussions on this point last evening and again this morning when he shared with me for the first time the actual Garda record under dispute. Following these discussions and having seen the Garda report this morning, it was my view that it raised additional issues requiring further explanation and clarification. I made this view clear to him and gave him space today to consider the matter further. However, he has decided that he's not prepared to address this allegation publicly and will not make any further statement or answer any questions on this issue in this House. This decision has created a situation where legitimate doubts and additional questions are being raised, and government colleagues are expected to address these. And this is simply untenable. It is my view that Minister Cowan had an obligation to come before the House. It's also my view that this issue is damaging to the ongoing work of government. Throughout this, I am conscious that there are important and legitimate legal processes underway where Deputy Cowan is questioning the accuracy of the Garda record and seeking to establish how his personal information became public. I have sought to respect these processes, and I would ask that colleagues do the same. This decision I have made is without prejudice to those proceedings. The challenges facing this government are unprecedented in scale, and the Irish people require nothing less than our full and undivided attention. It is in everyone's interest that the government not be distracted in any way from doing what is necessary to protect public health and our efforts to rebuild our society and our economy.
Speaking to Miriam O'Callaghan on RTE's Primetime last night, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, said the news of Barry Cowan's dismissal came as a surprise to him and that the decision was not down to Fine Gael influence.
I suppose the key question is what changed today. Did the Taoiseach, your leader Leo Varadkar, ask for Barry Cowan to go? Did he insist with the Taoiseach that Barry Cowan must go?
No, that's not my understanding of the of what happened. Clearly, former Minister Cowan and the Taoiseach were speaking on a number of occasions today, and this evening, just before the 9 o'clock news, clearly the Taoiseach felt that he no longer had confidence in Barry Cowan, and so has relieved him of his ministry. That's what's happened. I don't know what the content of the conversations between the Taoiseach and Barry Cowan were today. But clearly there's been some change in terms of the Taoiseach's knowledge of this case and what happened.
But actually, can I just come back in there, Minister, sorry.
Or whether it's linked to something that Barry Cowan has said to the Taoiseach, I'm not sure. But this was a decision made by the Taoiseach and the Fianna Fáil leader, not by anybody else in government.
Barry Cowan was unavailable to speak with us this morning, but he issued a statement on Twitter last night, which we voiced up.
The Taoiseach informed me this evening by phone that he was removing me from office as Minister for Agriculture. I am both surprised and disappointed with this decision. Previously, I furnished the Taoiseach with all the facts about my drink driving conviction and the story that the Sunday Times proposed to publish about my alleged evasion of a Garda checkpoint. In doing so, I provided him with confidential details about my interaction with An Garda Síochána. I have made my position on these matters known publicly, and I have acknowledged my wrongdoing for something that occurred 4 years ago. I have sought an explanation, not as a government minister, but as a citizen, as to how details relating to the incident were leaked to the media. The authorities have agreed to investigate the matter. One point warrants emphasis. At no time did I attempt to evade the Gardaí. Had I done so, the charges brought against me would, quite correctly, have been of a different tenor to those with which I was charged. I am responsible for the offence with which I was convicted 4 years ago, not for an inaccurate Garda entry on Pulse about that event. 10 days ago, and this afternoon, the Taoiseach believed my failure of 2016 didn't warrant my removal from office, but he now appears to have changed his mind based on a Pulse report I gave him this morning. It is important to re-emphasise that report was leaked in contravention of the protections that I and every other citizen is entitled to expect in respect of their interaction with the Gardaí. Unfortunately, the decision of the Taoiseach to remove me from office, when he supported me this afternoon in the Dáil, has undermined and potentially prejudiced my entitlement to fair process.
That was Barry Cowan's statement issued on Twitter last night, voiced by our reporter Killian Sherlock. Let's speak to Fianna Fáil TD and Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath. Good morning. Thanks very much for speaking to us today.
No problem. Good morning to you, Gavin.
Why was Barry Cowan sacked?
Well, Gavin, this was an incredibly difficult decision for the Taoiseach to make. And, you know, I have a huge amount of sympathy for Barry personally and his family. Like him, I was only appointed about 2.5 weeks ago. And I understand the elation that you have in being appointed to government and the huge privilege that it is. And for the last almost 2 weeks now, Barry has been dealing with this issue in the public domain. So that has been very, very difficult. I think the reason why the Taoiseach felt his removal from government was ultimately necessary was because this issue had become a huge political distraction from the ongoing work of government. The Taoiseach had a number of discussions with Barry Cowan on Monday night, on Tuesday morning, and then after leaders' questions again yesterday. And the Taoiseach was of the view that Barry should come into the Dáil, make a statement and address the issues that had come into the public domain in that story last Sunday on the Sunday Times, which, again, I should reiterate, Barry absolutely strenuously denies the allegation that was made in that article. Barry, for his own reasons, decided not to come into the House and make a statement, and the Taoiseach was then left with an extraordinarily difficult decision to make, given that this had developed into essentially a political crisis which showed no sign of abating and of going away. These issues develop in real time, in real life of politics, and unfortunately the Taoiseach had to arrive at the view that the ongoing saga was just incompatible with the normal functioning of government, because every press conference we did, every media interview we did on whatever issue, this was the story that everyone wanted to talk about.
But the Taoiseach, your party, Fine Gael and the Green Party, all backed Barry Cowan yesterday in the Dáil and backed his position that he wasn't going to speak about this issue publicly or take questions, a minister who didn't even turn up in the chamber yesterday afternoon, and then he sacked him a few hours later. So what changed yesterday afternoon?
So on Monday night and again on Tuesday morning, in the course of the discussions between the Taoiseach and Barry Cowan, and I wasn't personally involved in those discussions and I haven't seen the actual Garda file at issue here, but the Taoiseach would have asked Barry to come in and make the statement in the Dáil. Barry said he didn't wish to do so, and I think the Taoiseach was minded to afford him the time and space to reflect on that and to reconsider that position, and was hoping that Barry would make the decision to come in and make a statement. Barry, for his own reasons, which he can explain in his own time, and he's entitled to his good name on the substance of that new issue, decided not to come in and make that statement. And the Taoiseach, as he pointed out when he did come into the Dáil last night, just felt that that was not tenable, given that, you know, every other member of government was having to confront the issue and answer questions on the issue every time that we went out to talk about any other part of government policy. And I think just the reality of the extent to which this issue was dominating political and public discourse, and with no sign of it abating, it had to be dealt with in one way or another. And Barry, for his own reasons, did not wish to come in and address the issue in the House, and the Taoiseach felt the need to act.
Micheál Martin told the Dáil yesterday afternoon that he was made aware of newspaper allegations against Barry Cowan the weekend before last. He said he read the Pulse document yesterday morning. Why did it take him 10 days to get that document, given the gravity of the issue?
Well, my understanding is that Barry himself only received the document the day before, so on Monday, and he voluntarily gave a copy of the report to the Taoiseach yesterday morning. The Taoiseach had no automatic right to that report. That report, you know, was a personal file, and Barry voluntarily gave the Taoiseach a copy of that. So it was the first time that the Taoiseach had seen that actual report for himself, and of course discussed it further with Barry at that stage. And I think that reaffirmed his view that the issue should be dealt with in public, in the Dáil chamber, and Barry chose not to do so.
There was consternation within your own party when Micheál Martin sacked Barry Cowan, just hours, as we said, after backing him in the Dáil. Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrin told this programme earlier, it's an example of Micheál Martin's chaotic leadership. Isn't he right?
No, I don't accept that. I mean, look, this has been a very difficult issue for everyone, but not least for Barry and his family. He is somebody I have soldiered with for many years, and I know at first hand the amount of work that he put into getting this government formed, and the work he did for our party when we were a long way from being in government. And I want to acknowledge that. And, you know, he has paid a huge personal price for this issue. And, you know, again, to reiterate that he strenuously denies the allegation that surfaced yes. publicly at the weekend. But what was at issue here was the fact that the Taoiseach arrived at a view that it was not politically sustainable for Barry not to come in and deal with this head on. It was Barry's entitlement okay. not to do so, but there were political implications from that. And I think there's no denying that fact. We would be having a different conversation today, Gavin, if the Taoiseach had not made any decision. The story would be rumbling on.
Yes.
You know, today we have the Apple judgment. We have another cabinet committee where travel decisions.
Before I let you go, Michael McGrath,
because
we are a little short on time. In that
sure.
statement at the end, Barry Cowan said that unfortunately the decision of the Taoiseach to remove me from office when he supported me this afternoon in the Dáil has undermined and potentially prejudiced my entitlement to fair process. Isn't he right?
Look, but Barry Cowan has absolutely every right to defend his good name. The Taoiseach made it absolutely clear in his statement in the Dáil last night that his decision was without prejudice. The Taoiseach was passing no judgment whatsoever on the new allegation that was made in the Sunday Times and which is apparently referenced in the Garda file. The Taoiseach passed no judgment whatsoever on that. Barry Cowan, as a citizen, has every right to defend his good name and his reputation on that issue. The reality here is that the Taoiseach and the government had a very serious political problem.
Okay.
And given the scale of the issues we need to deal with, unfortunately, a line had to be drawn
okay.
and we all had to move on as a collective and address the issues we were elected to deal with.
Michael McGrath, thank you very much for speaking to us. We'll hear from County Offaly later. 27 minutes past 8.
Now, it was one of the most contentious issues in the general election campaign earlier this year, whether or not to raise the state pension age, given lengthening life expectancy, our ageing population and the attendant costs of funding retirement. In the event, the new government deferred a pension age increase planned for next year, pending recommendations from a commission on pensions. But this morning comes a report from the Independent Fiscal Advisory Council suggesting the best way to address the pensions time bomb, as it's sometimes called, would be to progressively raise the state pension age to 69. Sebastian Barnes is chairperson of the council and joins us now. Very good morning. Thank you for talking to us on the programme. This is really, at its heart, I suppose, all about the demographics. What's happening and will happen to our age profile as a nation in the decades ahead, do you believe?
So today Ireland's actually a relatively young population by European standards, but it's really going to age very, very rapidly and it's going to become much more like other European countries, and actually it's going to become even older than any European country really is today as things go. So if you look at the population today, one in six people is over the age of 65. If you look at that in a generation's time, it's going to be one in four. So that's a really major change. There's going to be four times as many people over the age of 85. So this is a really, really big changes that we're going to see in the coming years.
So that means that the dependency ratio, the proportion of people in work to those who are either too young to work or have reached retirement age will change. And that puts pressure, obviously, particularly in the context of what we're talking about on pensions and health spending.
Exactly. So if you look at it today, there's about five people working for every person who's retired. Within a generation, that's going to be more like 2.5 working people, working age people, for the number of retirees. So that you can see that just really changes the dynamics of it. And that's one of the reasons why a number of adjustments are going to be needed, not just on the pension age, but why increasing the pension age with life expectancy is going to help to manage that process. And one of the reasons why the population is aging is there are going to be a lot more people reaching retirement. Twice as many people are going to be reaching 65 in the coming decades as of now. But it's also because life expectancy is increasing. Today at age 65, on average, you can expect to live to 85. But within a generation, that's going to be 90. So we're basically gaining 2 months extra life expectancy for every year that goes by. And that's going to create huge pressures in the system. And that's one of the reasons why following that by raising life expectancy gradually in line raising the retirement age in line with the rising life expectancy is going to be very important to managing that process.
Yeah, before I discuss that with you, there's something else you identify, which is that the growth of our economy, and this is aside entirely from COVID, but you believe that our economic growth will slow in the decades ahead because of a decline in productivity.
Exactly. So on the one hand, we have this aging pressure. Now, the aging of the population also means there's going to be less employment growth, which is one factor that's going to be pulling down on growth. But the other factor is slowing productivity. And we've seen in Ireland's had a spectacular performance over recent decades. Average growth is over 3%. But that's very unusual amongst countries with Ireland's income level. So we expect that to come down. And that's in line with Irish trends. And that's also in line with international trends on productivity. So one of the things that's going to make the pension situation more complicated, it's going to be slower growth. The other aspect that's very important is rising health costs. And we've seen a lot of that, obviously, in recent years. But that kind of trend is likely to continue and will add to the pressures as well.
Yeah, three possible ways to address this you identify: reducing people's retirement benefits, the amount they receive in pension payments, increasing the contributions, PRSI contributions they have to make while they are in work, or increasing the pension age to 67, which is the one you seem to come down most strongly in favour.
So I think those are three options, and there are three options that politicians and society will have to take a view on, and maybe they will want to adjust other things as well. But I think given that people are going to be living longer and they're going to be enjoying longer periods of healthy living, a very natural response to this, I think, is to let the pension age rise. And so to keep the proportions roughly the same between how long people work and how long people are retired for. And if you do that, it makes a big contribution to making the whole system more sustainable.
Sebastian Barnes of the Fiscal Advisory Council, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Brian Finn has the business news.
Thank you, Gavin. About a third of business leaders here see a second wave of COVID as the biggest threat to the recovery. This is according to a survey of senior figures in over 300 firms carried out by the Institute of Directors in Ireland. Just under a quarter said the reluctance of staff to return to the workplace for health reasons was the biggest barrier to getting back to business. The maker of Kerrygold, Ornua, which is the biggest dairy exporter in the state, is to expand its US cheesemaking operation with a $10 million investment at its Wisconsin plant. The group says the expansion will facilitate an increase in production capacity by almost a third. Dublin-listed pharmaceutical services group Open Orphan has signed an option to acquire a company called CHI Magnets, which makes and designs what are known as challenge agents used in pharmaceutical trials. It has 3 months to complete the acquisition. Open Orphan recently announced that it was developing the world's first challenge study model to test the effectiveness of a number of COVID-19 vaccines. Currencies: the euro is trading at $1.14 and 90.6 pence sterling.
That's a very good morning once again to Damien O'Mara. Damien.
Brian, good morning to you. It's soccer to start, where Chelsea have given their hopes of qualifying for next season's Champions League a boost following a narrow 1-0 win over the already relegated Norwich City last night. Olivier Giroud scored the game's only goal in first half stoppage time. It means that Chelsea now sit third in the table this morning on 63 points, 4 points clear of Leicester City and Manchester United, who are back on 59. Chelsea, though, do have one game more played so far this season. Four games take place in the Premier League tonight. The champions Liverpool are away to Arsenal. That kicks off at 8:15. Second place Manchester City host Bournemouth at 6 o'clock. Much of yesterday's managerial press conferences ahead of tonight's games were dominated by Manchester City's successful appeal against UEFA's ruling that they had breached financial guidelines. The Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp described the day as not being a good day for football. The Spurs manager Jose Mourinho labelled the process as a disgrace. He went on to say that financial fair play was now a circus. In contrast, the Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola has unsurprisingly launched an impassioned defence of City's financial dealings and has particularly criticised the 8 Premier League clubs who had lobbied for Manchester City to be punished.
I love this club. I like to work with the people I'm working with. I like it. And when I say something wrong, we do something wrong, I'm the first to say we did something wrong. We have to apologize or have to accept the punishment or whatever the big statements or the big instance, they can do it. But it was not the case. It was not the case. I don't want to apologize for anything. I'm sorry, guys. Manchester City don't have apologize because the 3 independent judges decide we have done properly everything. So, and of course, I'm going to defend my club. And I'm critical of my club. And internally, when I don't like something, I said to my chairman, I said to them. So my chairman is not happy with me. We finished 21, 23 points behind Liverpool. He's not happy with me. But we discussed internally to try to do it better next season, to compete with them, but always on the pitch. And the people say something, go ahead and tell us here, face to face, not behind.
There was a remarkable result in the English Championship last night with Wigan Athletic beating Hull City by 8-0. Wigan had led 7-0 at half-time. It's the largest winning margin they've recorded in the club's 88-year history. As many people might know, Wigan recently went into administration shortly after its ownership was transferred between companies controlled by their majority shareholder. Funds which had been expected to be invested in the club were subsequently withheld. Wigan are now facing a 12-point deduction at the end of the current season. Last night's result leaves them 12 points above the relegation zone with 2 games left to play, so they certainly have a fighting chance of avoiding relegation despite those impending penalties. The club is managed by the former Sligo Rovers manager Paul Cook. West Brom missed out on the chance to replace Leeds on the top of the Championship table. They drew nil-all with Fulham. It's reported this morning that CVC, the private equity firm which is in talks to purchase a minority stake in the Six Nations, has sought to insert a clause in the deal which would allow them to withhold funding if the tournament schedule is affected by COVID-19. The Financial Times is reporting that the firm is willing to maintain its €330 million investment, but is seeking protection should fixtures be cancelled or bankruptcies break out within the sport. 4 matches from this year's championship remain uncompleted after postponements. The Irish Times, in contrast, is reporting that the offer has been reduced to €165 million. The Six Nations confirmed last week that exclusive talks with CVC were ongoing. The deal would provide a financial boost for the participating nations. CVC recently purchased a 28% stake in the Pro 14 and already own a 27% share of the English Premiership. As reported yesterday morning, the GAA have confirmed that dressing rooms and club gyms will remain closed beyond their initial planned return date of next Monday. They've also published updated guidelines on their website for clubs who encounter positive COVID-19 tests. Amongst the changes is now that a person found to have tested positive for COVID-19 and their close contacts will be restricted from participating in GAA activity and not the entire club, as had previously been the case. The former Monaghan footballer Dick Clerkin is the chair of the GAA's Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee and sits on its COVID-19 advisory group.
The guidelines that were issued a few weeks back in relation to a positive test in the team were probably deemed a wee bit conservative and the fact that they had to take a whole team down. But I suppose the GAA had no choice other than to do that in the absence of any better information or advice. I suppose over the last couple of weeks, you know, they've taken on board what has happened in terms of the prevalence of instances and how they've been dealt with. And really, like, taking government advice, you know, we're putting the onus in the hands of the authorities and the public health advisors to deem what is a close contact. And it's really only players within the circle or in close contact with that player will have to step down, not by default the whole team and mentors, which was the case up to now.
In golf, Tiger Woods has backed the decision to postpone this year's Ryder Cup until 2021, saying the event would not be the same without fans. Woods has played in the match on 8 occasions. He returns to action for the first time in 5 months at the Memorial Tournament this week. He's won the event a record 5 times, the last in 2012. Organisers of the Laytown races yesterday confirmed that this year's scheduled meeting will not take place in September. Racing action at home today is in Downpatrick from 1 o'clock. There's also a card in Killarney underway at 4:25. live. Updates available as always throughout the day on the RTE News Now app and also on the RTE Sport website.
Back to our main story, the sacking of Barry Cowan as Minister of Agriculture by his party leader and Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Let's go to the former minister's constituency. Our Midlands correspondent Kieran Mullooly is in Tullamore. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Gavin, and indeed welcome to the Tullamore Court Hotel. A sombre mood, one would have to say, in the Midlands this morning and indeed in Tullamore, particularly among friends and family supporters of the former minister, Barry Cowan, elected to the County Council here in Italy in 1992, elected to the Dáil in 2011. And so prominent throughout that period here. I suppose, you know, the reaction on social media obviously has been the easiest to gauge, I suppose, this morning. But perhaps one of the I suppose, earliest comments has come out from a man known around the country, a referee of some quality, Brian Gavin, a former All-Ireland hurling referee. He'd be a neighbour of, I suppose, of Barry Cowan and Offaly, tweeting last night, the decision Micheál Martin has made is like a referee losing control of a game and sends someone off harshly to try and show authority and regain control. And it's all about him, which will lead to his own downfall. Barry Cowan, head up. Now, that's the personal view of Brian Gavin, the man who's refereed several All-Ireland finals. But lots of support for Barry Cowan here, but also lots of people asking questions. I'm joined in the Tullamore Court by Councillor Declan Harvey, himself a former colleague, a councillor here for 11 years. Declan Harvey, what is the response? You must be disappointed and indeed shocked by what happened last night.
I'm devastated. I was discussed about Micheál Martin's decision to sack Barry Cowan. Barry and I have worked together for the last 11 years. At this stage, I would like to wish Barry and his family all the best going forward, and hopefully in time he could vindicate himself.
Did you see it coming, I suppose? That's the question. You know there's been a controversy for several days, yet locally I know many people in Fianna Fáil felt this was blowing over.
Well, I didn't see it coming. I thought it was blowing over myself, and I thought Barry had answered all the questions. He got up in front of the door and spoke to everybody. He answered the questions.
Can you understand the disquiet which was still there, nevertheless, after the Sunday newspaper reports again coming out, this allegation about evading a Garda checkpoint?
Yes, I can understand, but at the same time, I thought it was done and dusted. I really did. I thought Barry had answered all the questions, and I just want to give his wife and his family time to reflect and try and get things in order, okay?
Big disappointment for Fianna Fáil, obviously. No cabinet minister in the West, at least at this hour of the morning, and no cabinet minister in the Midlands now.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed. We have no minister in the Midlands. Barry would have done that brief, agriculture and marine, a lot of justice, because he's a very astute man and will be able to do his job. I'm disappointed with Micheál Martin, whether it was a Fianna Fáil decision or a Micheál Martin decision, I don't know, but I'm very disappointed.
Gerard Keegan is with me as well this morning here on Morning Ireland, Deputy Editor of the Tullamore Tribune. There is a wider, of course, effect for all of this, a significant loss for government influence in the Midlands region, and at a crucial time with the closure of Bordenamona and that just transition process just rolling out.
Yeah, there has been a lot of focus in the last couple of weeks on the fact that the West of Ireland hasn't got a minister. But from a Midlands point of view, the Midlands often takes the view, people hear that, you know, they're the ones who are left behind. They're overlooked over the years. Brian Cowan, Barry's older brother, of course, was a minister from 1992 onwards. He was always a minister from then on, apart from the times when Fianna Fáil wasn't in government. I suppose the view here was that Barry Cowan being appointed minister was, in a sense, a comeback from the trauma that Fianna Fáil, particularly in this area, suffered. They suffered in 2011 when Brian Cowan went out of office. There is definitely anger here towards Micheál Martin. Some Fianna Fáilers around here still hold the view that Micheál Martin was responsible in part for Brian Cowan's demise. But the wider issues are that, yeah, this is a critical time for the Midlands, Bordenamona and the ESB, the loss of power stations, the greening of Bordenamona, the end of peat harvesting. So there are thousands of jobs at risk, and Barry Cowan was seen as a strong voice on those issues. He, when I spoke to him on his appointment, one issue we actually discussed was the fact that he played a role in the programme for government negotiations, and he was very pleased that regional balance was at front and centre in the actual programme for government. So I think it was something that he was keen to stress in his time in government.
You talk about, you know, the role of Micheál Martin, but what about the role of Barry Cowan himself? I mean, many people in Tullamore are still sitting up this morning scratching their head and saying, what was going on here? Why hadn't he got a proper licence? Why didn't he explain things at an earlier date?
I suppose my own view is that hindsight is wonderful and that he should have fessed up, if you like, to Micheál Martin in 2016 when it happened, and maybe he would have saved himself a lot of bother now. People genuinely are asking the question, apart from those who are very loyal to Fianna Fáil, they're saying, why did he still have a provisional licence at the age of 49? And I think that's something which was probably in Micheál Martin's mind when he made his decision last night. But immediately yesterday, people were asking the question, you know, why? What happened between 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 8 o'clock? And I think that's something that will take a long time for that anger to abate.
Okay, there we have to leave it. Garrod Keegan and Councillor Declan Harvey, thank you both for joining us. As I say, a sombre mood in Tullamore this morning. Councillor, Deputy Barry Cowan, as he is now, lives in the Clara area, but is closely associated with the town. Fianna Fáil councillors in the area are expected to meet later today, and indeed the Fianna Fáil Cóirle Cánter representatives later on, and give their own reaction to the dramatic events of the last 24 hours. Back to you in the studio.
A replacement for sacked Minister for Agriculture Barry Cowan is to be named by the Taoiseach Micheál Martin today. The controversy around Mr. Cowan's drink driving charge had become a huge political distraction, according to Fianna Fáil Minister Michael McGrath when he spoke earlier on this programme. It had developed into a political crisis, he told Gavin, that showed no sign of going away. A very different note that sounded by the Taoiseach in his Dáil exchanges yesterday with the Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald.
It's now very clear that Minister Cowan needs to come before the Dáil to make a statement, but also to take questions, because a senior cabinet minister challenging the pulse records of the Gardaí, challenging their accuracy or indeed their truthfulness, is a very serious matter.
I saw the document this morning myself, and I'm glad it's, you know, that, and actually the having seen the document, it's not quite as portrayed, but nonetheless the document is there. No, it's not for me to publish. It's not my record. With respect, no, it's not my record. And people have entitlements here. It's not my record.
People have entitlements here. Micheál Martin speaking in the Dáil yesterday. We can have a final word on all of this with our political correspondent, Paul Cunningham. Paul, the opposition parties, and we heard them earlier on this programme, putting the focus on Mr. Martin. But do you think he's done enough at this stage to draw a line under this controversy?
Not today. I think there will be more questions. It was pretty clear from Sinn Féin's Eoghan O'Brien on your programme, where he said Micheál Martin does have more questions to answer. And it was also interesting to see how he characterised yesterday as chaotic. And I think that's a label which the opposition parties are going to try and hang around the neck of this new coalition government. You mentioned Michael McGrath giving this explanation that they had to move. It was a political crisis which showed no signs of abating. I thought it was also interesting that he said that Barry Cowan only received the Garda Pulse report on Monday, and he gave it to the Taoiseach on Tuesday. So the Taoiseach is acting on information within 24 hours, because one of the other points being put by the opposition was that he dithered for 10 days. So I think from Micheál Martin's point of view, that's an important line which we learned this morning.
All right, well, Mr. McGrath said they wanted to put the focus back on the business of government, and one of the aspects of the business of government, of course, at the moment is the pandemic. The Cabinet meets this evening, Paul. On the agenda, among other issues, presumably, will be whether or not to ease the COVID restrictions. The next phase of easing them is due on Monday. It's principally around pubs and other such venues, whether there be access to them. Is today decision day on all that?
Yeah, I mean, look, politics really is a brutal business at times, and today is one of those days. The Cabinet is going to meet at 5:30. There will be a new Agriculture Minister, possibly a new Chief Whip also sitting around the table, and it is the first big decision they're going to have to deal with on COVID-19. This isn't one that they're going to bat away. The question is this country going to move into the final phase of reopening? And that would mean pubs reopening come Monday the 20th, and more outdoor mass gatherings. But it seemed pretty clear last night that from NPHET there were serious concerns about the rise in new cases over the past 2 weeks, that there was a high rate of infection among young people. And I think maybe an indication of how Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, was looking at it when he was expressing concern about that and was saying how he was also concerned about house parties and how younger people were acting. It did give an indication that the way the government was approaching this matter was conservatively, just exactly what they're going to do, we will find out. But if you were just reading into what Micheál Martin was saying, it could suggest that they're not going to go all the way on Monday, that there could be another, it could be a staggered reopening in the final phase.
Right. NPHET advises, but the government decides, and this is particularly in relation to the pubs, a matter which will put a good bit of political pressure on the government.
Yeah, and I think that is very clear. NPHET saying all we do is we give advice. It is up to the cabinet to decide. It is sovereign. And now one of those decisions has to be taken. Are you going to do it? Are you not? And then afterwards, you have to come out and justify it. We know that from the Licensed Vintners Association, many of their members have saying that even if the cabinet decides to reopen on Monday, they won't, because they don't have enough certainty yet. They haven't been able to put everything in place this week. So the government is in a bind on this. It is getting criticised over it. So there needs to be clarity, and it needs to come immediately.
All right. Another powerful and vocal sector is the aviation industry, and we know that in recent weeks they've been arguing strongly for a relaxation of the travel restrictions, the 14-day quarantine period. Now that's, I don't think, up for consideration or decision today, but where are we in relation to all of that, Paul, and the publication of this green list of countries that it may be possible to travel safely to and from?
Yeah, the chairman of the COVID-19 committee, Michael McNamara, said he was inviting in both airports and airlines to come into the Oireachtas and outline their position about what needs to be done. That seems to be lined up for later on this month. When it comes to the government, they've been very clear that while they're not going to ban flights, they're going to strengthen the tests that come on passengers arriving into the country, that they have to say where they're going to go, that there's going to be increased scrutiny of those declarations, and there are penalties apply and they will be imposed if they're not lived up to. So we're still waiting to see how that's going to pan out, and there is a sort of still a little bit of doubt about exactly what those measures are going to be. We should learn more on Monday.
Very good. And more from you, no doubt, in the course of the day, Paul. Thank you very much for that.